Hey everybody, I'm Pat, and it's going to be short and sweet. So I've known our speaker for a while now, and I always get so much out of his shares. Please join me in welcoming, well, I want to say it like this. Here's Johnny. Johnny B.
Hi, guys. My name is Johnny. Hi, and I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups. Happy birthday to birthday celebrants. We had some people that I really care, big hitters at this meeting. Thank you. And I especially want to welcome the newcomers. I don't know how you feel, but I remember how I felt when I got here, and I came in, I was so enraged and frustrated that all of my machinations couldn't get her to stop drinking. And the arguments that I would have and get so twisted up. It's been said that alcoholics die of liver failure and Al-Anons die of stomach cancer. And the most important thing for the really new people is that there's no situation that's too bad to be bettered. And when I heard that, it changed everything. It changed everything. I want to thank Pat for asking me to lead. I woke up at 3 a.m. a week ago Wednesday with my mind telling me exactly what to say when I got here tonight. And thanks, Pat. I see that you guys moved the literature table. That's unacceptable to me. It needs to be back there. I'm going to try to stick with abide by our traditions, the enforcement of the adherence to the unenforceable. And if I mess up the traditions, Pat's right there. You can talk to him after the meeting or call your sponsor or talk to God, whatever, you know, you need to write some inventory. I just want to say a couple things about Johnny and about how this works. Today was rough for me. It really reminded me of being new in Al-Anon because I couldn't stop it from talking to me about what to do once I got to this lectern. So I turned to step one and I turned to God. And then the next thing I knew, it was just going again. And I tried to play an Al-Anon audio tape of a speaker and I couldn't hear anything that was said. And then I was on the 210 coming here and I get off at Gould, which is better. If anybody wants to, I'll explain it to you after the meeting. I miss Gould because I was talking to myself and the mind, it's the mind, it's a mind power self. It's like a perpetual motion machine, you know, and it's self-generating. So what brought me to my knees was there was a guy when my first group, I was living in Brentwood, Bel Air, and I was married to a beautiful, smart woman who was at UCLA getting her doctorate in early Christianity. And she's like a genius. And she had 10 years sober. And due to the family disease of alcoholism, our relationship started to deteriorate at an incredible rate. And we would have these insane arguments about nothing, and we wouldn't be arguing the same point. And it would tie me up so tight. And I'm a smart guy. When I was little, I was diagnosed with a Mensa IQ. And I believed I come from an alcoholic home and very erudite and intellectual. And it was the 70s, and there was a lot of drugs and a lot of liquor, and that was rampant. And I learned, and there was a lot of love there, but at the same time, there was so much judgment and negativity and talking so horribly about people that this is my mind. I have a hurt and mean and mind. And it's so judgmental that when I hear it, I have to stop and turn back to step one. I have to see that my life, which ain't out there, is unmanageable. And I got to say, when I got here, there was a couple of things in the literature that I found really disturbing. I'm going to read you one of them. There are even those among us who are arrogant, smug, self-righteous, and dominating. Like, excuse me? You know, the level of identification with that statement is, saying it's that I identify with that statement is a major understatement. It's so, you know, they say often wrong, never doubtful. I'm not on a level playing field with anybody. I super crave to have an emotional connection with you, but I can't do it. I don't have the tools. I can't do it with intellect. And this is what I find so beautiful and freeing. At the same time, it tears apart everything I thought I knew, everything I learned in the alcoholic, dysfunctional home that I grew up in about how to live in this world. You guys, it's a whole new way of life that I couldn't possibly imagine. So I was living with this beautiful woman, completely out of my mind. She's loaded. She had 10 years of abstinence and sort of on the fringes of AA, like, you know, loitering with the intent to recover. And I couldn't believe that she started drinking again. I couldn't believe the signs were all there, but of course, I blind myself to those signs, and now she's loaded, and I'm out of my mind, and I'm start talking to, I had a really good friend who was a member of Al-Anon, and I started asking questions about what to do, and he gave me no advice, but he talked about his own experience. And I found that really helpful, and I try to be that guy today. There came a day when I had to get up at like 5 in the morning to go to work. And she was up all still, you know, and she said, I need some money. And I said, well, all I have is $100 bill and I got to stop and get gas on my way to work. And she said, well, that's unacceptable. I need some money. And I said, well, I don't know what to tell you there, young lady. I said, why don't you take your computer and hawk it and get some cash for it, and you can have some money, and then we'll go tomorrow and get your computer on a hawk. She thought that was the most ridiculous idea of that's ever been said. And I'm shocked that it's a long time ago, yet it's so vivid to me today. So I get in the car and I start driving, and I'm replaying that discussion argument with her over and over and over and over and over in my head. And I keep trying to rearrange the conversation to make myself more comfortable. And it's not, I turn on the red. Nothing I do can stop this argument. It's like I am an argument, you know? And I went and I was professionally driving and I picked up the client and it stopped. And I'm like, oh, thank God. I get him to the client to LAX. The moment the client gets out of the car, it starts going again. And my life, my inner life, my emotional life was 100% unmanageable in that moment. And I called my friend and I asked him what to do. And he said, nobody can tell you what to do, but you know what to do. And I went back to that apartment. We had been evicted and ended up in an apartment in Hollywood. And I went into the apartment and I said, I just can't do it today to her when she wanted to start the argument. And I packed one paper grocery bag with a few things. And I got in the car and I left and I went. My parents were still alive and they had a really nice house in Malibu. And I went and I spent the night at my parents' house, and I woke up the next morning a completely different person. I was so free all of a sudden. I was surrendered by the family disease of alcoholism. And I pushed all in on being a member of Al-Anon, because I knew you guys had a solution for me. And I knew that I could not produce a good life for myself with my mind, with intellect. I had no idea that feelings were a part of the whole situation. You know, I just thought it was all about intellect. And I started to talk to Patty N. from Culver City. Some of you probably know her. She's in the program, I think, 50 years. And she was giving me gentle suggestions of how she lives this program. And I found out that Al-Anon is absolutely magical. That when I take these suggestions that aren't a product of self, that aren't a product of my mind, and I am willing to try it, the results are incredible. I remember I was going to meet with Erica, this woman who I was married to at the time. And I was very concerned about what was going to happen at this meeting. And there were some really important things pointed out, that you can't reason with the alcoholic. And I went, oh my God. It's so obvious. I can't. How much time and energy I spent trying to reason with the alcoholic. It was insane. And she told me, if you want to communicate something, here's what I do. She said, write down what you want to communicate and then 3, 4, 5 ways to say it. And then practice saying it. And whichever one resonates with your heart the most, say that. And then the next time it comes up, say exactly the same thing. Keep saying exactly the same thing. And one of the most important things, Erica, God rest her soul, I was living in downtown 6 years later, and I opened my door to take out the trash, and a business card that was wedged in the door fell on the ground. It was from the LA coroner, and it said, please call me Erica. And I called. I hadn't seen Erica in years, but we were still legally married. And the coroner told me they found her overdosed in a hallway in some known drug building on Alvarado. And I had to call her mom. And the disease is brutal. It's brutal. And I remember my next relationship after Erica was Jesse, and we had Jesse and I have a kid, Milo. Milo's 9 now, but he used to come to this meeting. I remember one time I put Milo, I had two guys come over to my apartment in downtown, and we were coming to this meeting, and Milo used to love coming because of the childcare. And I put Milo in his little car seat. He was about 3, maybe 2.5. And we start driving. We go by Dodger Stadium, and Milo throws up all over his clothes. And I go, sorry, guys, we're going to have to go back, and we won't be able to go to the Al-Anon meeting. And Milo, 2.5 years old, says, we are going to that Al-Anon meeting. He assumed, he didn't know what we were doing in here, but he thought that what they were doing in there was the Al-Anon meeting. Anyway, I really, he's a cute little guy. And him and I have, he's never seen me rage. And that's unbelievable to me. We have a beautiful relationship. His mom moved to San Diego, so I only get to see him every other weekend. He stays with me and my beautiful wife, Cynthia, who's sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She just celebrated 25 years. And I try to be the best husband. I got my wedding ring on. Sometimes I don't wear it and she gets mad at me. I think she thinks that I'm just going to get attacked by women if I don't wear it. And so it makes her happy that I wear it. I put my socks in the hamper because I was on a offsite and I learned that there's a potential that putting your socks in the hamper instead of throwing them on the floor can make you a sex symbol. Thanks, Jack. I've been through hell with Milo's mom. She, the thing about the family disease is my actions and my attitudes make it worse. The things I say, the manipulation that I do, the arguing, like, I get it, like, when I would berate Erica for drinking, that must have made her very thirsty, So I found a new Erica with a different head. And one of my favorite Al-Anon memes is a cardboard box filled with red flags. And the caption is, I know, I'm dating it anyway. The first time I went out on a date with Milo's mom, God was screaming to me in my heart. But there was some other appendage that wasn't listening to any of it. And in 2016, it was over. Milo was 1. I had full custody, and I had to call the police to get her out of my apartment. And I, in that moment, I once again had another full surrender, that I knew I could never have any kind of contact with this human being safely. And I started, and these bottoms convinced me more that I'm powerless over alcohol and that my life is unmanageable, and step one needs step two, man. And every problem in my life is a step two problem, that there's nothing I can't take to this power, that I can't see that self thoughts and feelings are ineffective to solve these problems in my life. And it's so strange. Like, if your spouse is a practicing alcoholic, is drinking, it doesn't really bother me. But if it's my spouse, boy, I'm so disturbed, which points out to me that it's not the alcohol, It's the fact that it's my alcoholic. It's the possession. You know, they say possession is 9/10 of the law. I don't, if there's a lawyer here, I apologize. I don't think that's true. But when I take, like, I want everybody to hear to have plenty of money. I just don't want them to have any of my money, you know? It's all about me. It's all about self. That was the other thing in the literature that really blew my mind. It blew my mind. Let it begin with me, which is really our core and founding principle here, that no matter what other people, look, they say if you're new to Al-Anon, if someone's drinking bothers you, welcome to Al-Anon. If someone's not drinking bothers you, welcome to Al-Anon. And if everybody bothers you, welcome to Al-Anon. And I fit into that last category. And I come, you know, and I see my character, and I know I'm so scared of living in this world of people. And I really come off as very arrogant a lot. And I don't know if arrogant is the right word. I certainly am a know-it-all, you know, but it's not real. It's cursory. It's on the surface because it's just this thing called self trying to pump itself up because of the low self opinion so that you'll love me. Because it has this belief that if you love me enough, I'll love myself. And that's a broken thought too, because it's unsatisfiable. My mind is unsatisfiable. There isn't enough love out there. So let it begin with me. And that's why these early steps are so paramount for my life. It's like there's two distinct applications of the Al-Anon program. One is this passive nature where I do these steps and come to meetings and start a program when I wake up and thank God when I go to sleep. And little by slowly, my character changes. Like, I'll tell you something that blows my mind every time. Every argument used to be the most imperative thing in the world, whatever I was willing to die for right now. Every single bump was a mountain for me to die on. Today in my relationship, I don't even want to get a hangnail on that mountain. My serenity is imperative to me. So when there's a disagreement in my home, I personally try to bring the traditions into the home and this idea that personal recovery for the greatest number depends on unity, the unity in my home. This principle has entered my life as a way of life in a passive way. And I think about it. Is this thing I'm about to say or not say, or this thing I'm about to do or not do, increase or decrease the unity in my home? And I keep my mouth shut so much more than I ever wanted to. I'm a reactor rather than an actor. And that means that I don't have a choice. It just comes out of whatever the snarky or mean or thing is, it just pops out of my mouth and I'm driven by it. And what this passive nature gives me is a moment of pause where I can be loving and kind. There's also an active nature of the program, which I find much more effective for me, that right now, like this right now, I enter Al-Anon. and I see the thing that's invisible to me, my track record of living in this world, that I'm not management material. That's a tough pill for me to swallow. I heard it in an AA meeting once. That's a tough pipe to get your lips around. That I'm the wrong power for my life. That I need to turn my will and my life over to God. That in the blue book, it says we asked his protection and care with complete abandon. And I was telling Phil, I like to look at this stuff, like our literature, and pull it apart like little threads and like really look at each one. And I thought about it, and I think about, if I'm not asking God's care and protection with complete abandon, I'm under my care and protection with complete abandon. And now I got to look at what that means. You do not want to turn your life, your inner life, your protection and care over to the hypervigilant. Because what I do is I'm overprotective of my own life to the point that I shut myself off from everyone and everything. And that is insane. God has no grandkids. We are all brothers and sisters. I have a post-it hanging from my computer, one of my computer monitors, that says, open your heart, take a chance. And this is the phase of my development that I'm in right now. Like, I see how, what a failed model it is for me to be my protector and carer, that I'm protecting myself from things that aren't happening. So I ask, I see, I stop when step two enters my life. I see it's not about believing in a God. It's about seeing that I'm failed at that job. Like, God's not his name, it's his job. And I'm terrible at it for my life. So I get to stop and see, boy, everything's not so imperative. And I get to see, let it begin with me. That I thought my problem was her. My problem was you and what you're doing or not doing. And as it turns out, that's just a trick of the family disease of alcoholism. It takes some self-obsession. See, I'm obsessed with me as the Lord of my life, with every... I think I see you, but I really only see you through the lens of me. And everything is so subjective. There's no, and this, guess what the subject is? It's me. There's no objectivity. And step four is magic. This program, these steps, get to do this incredible thing of the deconstruction of old ideas and beliefs and self. That it's a process. Like, our slogans are incredible, and the guidelines and tools that we have are incredible, but ultimately I'm going to have to do some work to start to deconstruct Johnny and look at the truth and let go, and really let go. See, I want to turn my will, my desire, and my life, my inner life, over the care of God, and I want to love and serve you, but I can't do any of that because I'm blocked by a bunch of old ideas, by a bunch of judgment about me, all this negative self-talk about self and negative feelings about Johnny, that I'm never good enough. It's like I'm in a domestic violent situation. but I live alone up here, you know, and through this active nature of the application of the principles, by thinking about steps 1, 2, and 3 right now, it opens my mind to a power other than self, which I don't even, can't even see, can't even imagine in the moment until I do. And the peace that comes is incredible. And I get to see my part in it, my responsibility. See, I don't like that word. But I'm learning to love it, you know? I'm learning that these, the problems in this dream life are so often made worse by things I don't do that I should do, that, as much as things that I do that I shouldn't do. And I get to take those actions and I get to slow down and not take myself so seriously. It's such a self-important mind. So to flip the switch and see that it's not about you and it's not about her, this self-centeredness and self-obsession becomes an asset, like the ultimate asset for my life. Who would have thunk it? When I get to really stop and look at the truth about Johnny, they say, like, you know, there's a Zen cone. I hope I'm not violating any traditions by talking about Zen. When the lake is all churned up with drama, all you can see is the lake, you know? But when the lake is still and placid, you look at the water and all you can see is your own reflection, is to see self. And that's what has happened, and that's what happens over time. As serenity comes, I get to have a much better view of really what's going on inside. And ignorance is not bliss, you know, it's just not. It's, I understand whoever said it was looking at the truth about themselves. But I got to go deeper. And it's taken me a long time to realize what this was all about, you know, that this is about you and giving, about being a giver, that my sick need to manipulate people to get them to do what I thought was right, or I still do think is right. All the thoughts and feelings about me and about my need for the world to be away, for the literature table to be back where it belongs. There's freedom from that. And I was giving everything of myself to my marriage when I got here, but in a self-seeking and self-centered way. So when you guys started to explain about being a giver around here, taking commitments, joining, getting a service commitment, I thought, I'm spent on this giving thing. I can't do it. But there's a different kind of giving when there's no thought of anything in return for me. It's just giving for the sake of giving. And I knew that was one of your little tricks. But I never realized how deep and powerful that is. That's exactly the spin, the change, the character change, the personality change, that these steps make me into a man who wants to be a giver, not so that I'll get anything, but just there's a satisfaction and a beauty in that kind of giving. And like, so I am on my way here. I missed the exit because I'm talking to me about what I'm going to say. As soon as I got here, I got out of the car. I went directly into the kitchen and started helping with the cake because I know the trick. That freedom from the bondage of self, yes, I have to take these steps and I have to inventory it and I have to deconstruct the self. But if I want to have an experience with freedom from all of that, from self, being a giver right now is what's magical. And I have one sponsee that I'm working with, and we're going through the traditions, and not like really a sponsor-sponsee thing. We're just going through them together, and it's really a beautiful thing. It's really an amazing thing. When I become a guy who desires unity, when I see the magic of falling through the problem into the solution in a way, you know, like fear is a mile high and a mile wide, but it's paper thin. And when I become sure positive that unity with you and unity with my wife is the most important thing, I'm willing to grab a new set of tools for my life. And I've brought up several times gently with my wife, having our home be run by the traditions, and she's tentatively interested in it, but that doesn't matter. Let it begin with me. So I'm applying them. And I went on the offsite, what was it, 3 weeks ago, about the traditions. And I'm like, no, they didn't tell us it was going to be about the traditions, because I don't think anybody would have gone. I said, we should do the next one on the 12 concepts, and then for sure nobody will come. When I got home, I got to watch how beautiful God is and how beautiful Al-Anon is, and see that I start considering the unity in my relationship with my wife. And when the phone rings, I considered, and I'm considering, the unity with who I'm talking to. It's like I get changed around here with no thought or effort really on my part in that way. It's not like I'm, you know, it's very polished over here and it shines over there. It's magic. Al-Anon is magic. And Karate Kid, you know, wax on, wax off. And why am I doing this? It starts to make sense. It starts to get clear. So the literature, meetings, unity, like God, when I got here, it was the group that was power for me, you know? And then as I started to stick around and develop, I started to pray to a God that I didn't know about. And this relationship with God, which I need right now, like, I just don't remember much, but it all became about this religious experience with God in my heart, you know, and the group became less important. And those two have coalesced into my understanding that it's all the same, that a group of dudes or group of you guys and this power are all one, that it's all one, that all of this mind and emotional stuff is an activity of mind, that self powers, like I started off by saying, and it's all ridiculous, that this is just a beautiful dream. And it's not that different than the dream I have when I'm sleeping, except this is a lot more vivid, you know? And when I get to, when that reality is revealed to me, that all I am is the spark of God and awareness, to see how incredible this world is, that I, free of the family disease of alcoholism, I get to see a beautiful planet, which I don't see left to my own devices. I see a hostile place with a lot of problems in the world. But when I'm free, I get to see we live in the most incredible planet that's ever been seen. with the water and the skies and clouds and atmosphere and forests. And it's just beautiful. And to have a life where I get to stop and have a cup of tea and actually enjoy it because my mind isn't blowing up with what's wrong with everything is incredible. And the only problem is that I take it for granted. I would love to tell you guys that I love myself, but I don't. And it's a semantic thing. I love my life and I love you guys. And I love the way that the actions I take in this world are better than I'm the best Johnny I've ever been, and I have respect for Johnny. But this idea of what self is no good. It's abusive. And there may come a time where I can say I love it. I certainly tolerate it. And I certainly have compassion for it. And that compassion translates to this we hear it at every meeting. Principles above personalities. I know. When I get to see how scared Johnny is, I get to see, oh my God, they're just scared too. And I get to see if I'm fueled by a reaction rather than responding, they're fueled by a reaction rather than responding to. And I get to soften up. That's really what's happening around here, is this beautiful softening of Johnny, of my heart, and opening. And it's the most important thing in my life by miles. I love you guys and I love Al-Anon, and I'm super grateful to be with you. And I'll tell you this, I hope for the newcomers that you stay with us. I hope that I'm willing to keep coming back because it's an incredible deal. So thanks for having me.